Welcome to another interview in the series of Fearless Parenting audio trainings with Adelaide Zindler, author of the book, Fearless Parenting.
Welcome to this CD, titled Food Truth versus Disease Management, from the wheel of your child's life that I like to call physical health status. I was using a portable phone for this interview since the baby dropped the other one a few times, so we get into some sound issues, but we recoup our losses relatively quickly. It was at this very point that I was trying to state a disclaimer after David shared his view on parents who don't choose to breastfeed. This is another interview that I urge you to listen to with your journal beside you. David Getoff has very strong views on nutrition. He will speak from his heart about the importance of breastfeeding, and I can already see the emails coming from offended parents who've made other choices. So I ask permission to include a note from the pediatrician who you will also hear from in this series. She, too, reacted to what David had to say. You see, she and her husband adopted their baby. And I hope this also helps prepare you for some of what you're about to hear. She writes, Adelaide, I used to think any mom could breastfeed until I realized how messed up so many people's hormones are from all the estrogenic substances in the environment, adrenal stress, etc. Besides all that, sometimes it's the baby who can't support nursing because of birth trauma, in which case they need both osteopathy and lactation support. Finally, having my own child and not being able to breastfeed broke my heart. So I have compassion for these moms. I used to be so embarrassed when I was shopping and Michael was chomping on his beloved bottle. I recently learned that the La Leche League teaches parents to nurse even when they have adopted. Most of us would not know this because their work needs to be made public and readily available. Nonetheless, David goes on to share nuggets you'll want to hear, so please, don't throw the baby out with the bathwater, so to speak.
Thank you so much for being willing to do this, David. It is an incredible privilege having known you now for a number of years. You are, in fact, a board-certified clinical nutritionist, traditional naturopath with a very busy practice, and you speak around the world. You have physicians who actually consult with you on a regular basis about nutrition for their patients. You've been a mentor to me personally for a number of years now. You actually joined me as a speaker for the Knee and Shoulder Symposium that my company was the lead sponsor for. When I co-chaired San Diego's annual preschool director's workshop, you agreed to speak and caused quite a commotion by opposing what the FDA requires preschoolers be fed. Came and spoke at the pharmacy where I was a consultant and again left a buzz long after you were gone. You also have been producing, I understand, a great deal of educational nutritional videos to help those who are unable to see you in person. And I want to get into that at the end of this interview. There is so much conflict information about what we should eat and what we should be feeding our children right from the start. Hospitals routinely give us formula to leave with, and some are beginning to offer lactation consulting, but in my experience, David, there is a lot that is still missing. What should a parent feed their baby first 12 months of life, and are there any exceptions that you can think of to that?
There's such a tremendous amount of conflicting information, and a great deal of actually the worst information comes from the people and the organizations with the most respect and the most credentials, so it makes things very, very difficult. The most important thing to look for in long-term health and results, proven by nutritional research, is really that's what people have to take a look at. In other words, if you want to take a look for certain that something is really going to work, then you need to look at historical research. Let's see what people have already done. So let's just take breastfeeding as an example.
Yes.
World Health Organization and their research make it very, very clear that the United States is pretty low on the list when it comes to healthy children, and we're also in pretty poor shape as far as infant mortality is concerned. So obviously, we're doing a great number of things wrong. The World Health Organization tells mothers around the world that they should be breastfeeding their babies, and the published research clearly shows that those infants who receive no food and no drink of any kind except breast milk for the first 9 months of their life are the healthiest and remain the healthiest as they grow up. I actually spoke to one of the research scientists a number of months ago, and he made it clear to me that the study should have been carried out for more than 9 months, that it should have been carried out for 12 months or 14 months
Wow.
or 18 months, and that he thinks that those children would have been even better. But when people quote that you have to do it for at least 9 months, it was only because they stopped the study at 9 months.
Oh, my goodness.
So, you know, some of my prospective patients might call me an ogre, but since I'm so busy and I have, you know, more patients than I can handle,
yes.
You know, I always tell people that I won't work with a pregnant woman unless she agrees that she will be breastfeeding her child exclusively, no other food, no other drink, just breast milk, even if she has to pump, nothing but breast milk for at least the first 12 months of the child's life. And, you know, I sort of feel like if a mom doesn't care enough about her child to do that, then I sort of begin to wonder, why did she allow herself to become pregnant if she's going to put something else above the child's health for the first 12 months? So for your answer for what I feel they should get for the first 12 months, they should get nothing but breast milk for the first 12 months, with, of course, obviously, the mother eating very healthy.
Well, I can tell you, I need to get this in at this
point. You're cutting in and out. You just vanished. I'm only getting about every other word of what you're saying. You're not on a portable, are you?
I need to say to parents who are listening that David, is this better?
No, I heard about two words out of six.
Okay. Tell me when you can hear me clear. I'm kind of moving around a little bit.
Okay, now you're coming in clear.
Is that?
No, now you're cutting back out again. Are you on a portable phone?
I am. I have to be. The baby dropped the other phone so many times, they say it's not a good connection.
Oh, my goodness. I remember the last radio show I called in on, they said I had to be on a wired phone or they wouldn't even talk to me.
Oh, my gosh. Okay. Hearing me now?
I heard me now, but I didn't hear the words before that, which I assume
okay.
were probably, are you hearing me now?
Okay. How's this? It seems like we're, let me, more time. Can you hear me?
Only some of the words. The rest of them are getting cut off.
Okay. Hold on. Just. Hello, David?
I'm here.
Oh, my gosh. Okay. I'm on the phone that they say isn't the best connection, but I have to run with this.
Okay.
I got to get this out.
Sure.
Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, now I hear you perfectly.
Okay, good. I changed phones, and I hope it works.
All right.
So
basically you said the first 12 months and are there any exceptions?
Yes.
So we have the first 12 months covered. And as far as exceptions, well, obviously, sometimes somebody adopts. So if they've adopted a child, they can't breastfeed. In old times, very often somebody would find a wet nurse, you know, somebody else
right.
that was still breastfeeding that could do that. And, of course, that would be the best. And, you know, it's possible that the mother might be on some kind of prescription drug and is not supposed to be breastfeeding. If their person is working with me, I'm going to try and see if I can correct the problem so that the doctor won't need to have them on that drug so we can breastfeed again. So there are always exceptions.
Okay.
The most important thing is the breastfeeding. And then the question is, what do we do after the breastfeeding?
Yes.
And that's where I'm also, of course, you know me, totally at odds with the rest of the world because I want the kids to be healthier and the rest of the world doesn't care if everybody has the average number of cancers, heart disease, and diabetes, and I don't want that. So I tell people that as you bring in new foods, starting with 12 months, let's say through 24 months, you have to look at, well, what have we been doing? And we've been doing breast milk. And what is breast milk? Well, breast milk is raw animal protein, raw animal fats, lots of live enzymes, plenty of water as part of the breast milk, and some milk sugars. And the very bad way to feed your child during the second year would be to switch from this marvelous nature's perfect food of fresh raw breast milk into things like fruit juice, which is sugar water. That's a horrible thing to switch to, and that's what people are doing. Or into pure refined starches like breads and crackers and white rice, or pureed fruits and starchy vegetables like potatoes. You want to instead try and switch them into something that's as close to what they were getting as possible, which is animal fats, animal proteins. So I tell people when they start to introduce the first foods other than breast breast milk, that they should try to get grass-fed beef, grass-fed lamb, eggs, to get good quality stuff, because, you know, they shouldn't be fed on grains. They should be fed on grass like cattle are supposed to. Mm-hmm. And if we have good quality meats, they can be cooked very rare so that the meat is still easy for the child to digest, because they don't have a great digestive tract yet, and we want to make things as easy as possible, like the raw milk. Well, if they're afraid of raw, make it rare. And, you know, grind it up if you need to, puree it. But, again, we want to keep it with large amounts of animal proteins, large amounts of animal fats. We don't want to switch it to sugar, water, or starches, and that's what everybody's doing. So they're really doing an awful lot of things that are wrong. I'm hoping to produce an entire video just on feeding kids from, let's say, you know, birth to 3 years old or so. But at least my current three-hour attaining Eating for Optimal Health video will give the parents a lot of information. And really, you know, a child is just a baby adult. So there are some differences, but most of the same parameters hold true.
Wow. So this sounds like something that as a parent, I'm thinking, how can I make this kind of transition when I have a busy lifestyle? But it sounds like you're saying those same principles can be applied to me as well.
Yes, the same principles for both. There was one study that was presented at one of our scientific conferences a year ago, which was fascinating. They found that those children that during the first 12 months of their life were fed even one single portion of a wheat-based food. In other words, sometime during the first 12 months after birth, they were given a cookie or a cracker or a little piece of pasta or something, just something with wheat in it, were far more likely to become diabetic.
You're kidding. Wow.
And, of course, wheat of all kinds and in all forms is a pretty scary food when you learn the facts about it. You know, people would be better off if they didn't eat wheat anyway. But
wow.
It's just interesting.
Oh, David. You know, I have to stay focused because I want to go on so many tangents. You inspire so many thoughts in me. If we have time at the end, but let me just plow through this.
Sure.
When it comes to milk, you're talking about that heavily in breastfeeding. In Los Angeles, I understand from having confirmed it personally that they banned the sale of raw milk, and in a short time, the stores where I shopped, milk was not available. It later was determined that milk wasn't the culprit, but still people are scary, afraid of using it, and even there's warnings on the label. So how would you respond to this?
Well, raw milk from organically raised cows, which are fed grass out in the pasture, so they're outdoors, they're eating grass and weeds, they are not eating grains, produce some of the healthiest food on our planet, namely the raw milk. You know, sadly, it's not available in most states, but luckily it is available in California, except, as you mentioned, during that time when they pulled it off the market, thinking that it had caused problems, when in fact they found out that none of the problems were caused by the raw milk, and two of the families were interviewed whose children got over the infections that they had gotten from, I believe it was spinach, much faster than the other children. They got over the infections faster, and the parents attributed that to the fact that theirs were the only kids that were drinking raw milk, and so their immune systems were working so much better that they got over it much faster. So the way I address it to most people is I tell people that they need to either buy a copy of The Untold Story of Milk by Dr. Ron Schmidt, or the new video that just came out entitled The Whole Truth About Milk. They're both available from the Price Pottinger Nutrition Foundation at PPNF, Price Pottinger Nutrition Foundation, ppnf.org. And after they've, you know, read that or watched the video, they will then know a lot of the facts which are being withheld from the public, and they'll understand why they really need to be more afraid of pasteurized milk than they do about raw milk. Because when cows are fed grass and weeds, which is what cows are supposed to eat, instead of corns and grains that somebody buys from them in a store that, of course, the cow couldn't have shopped in and puts them in front of them, their milk is loaded with the healthy bacteria that we use to make yogurt, lactobacillus, acidophilus, and bifidus, and there's an adequate amount of those two bacteria to crowd out any harmful bacteria. So there's nothing else in the milk if it's eating grass. The problems are only when they feed it other things other than grass. And the idea that milk has to be pasteurized only developed after cows began to be housed away from their grassy fields, indoors, being fed grains, which was never part of how a cow should be raised. And when they did that, all sorts of other bacteria started growing inside the animals getting into the milk, and so they had to pasteurize it. And then then what they had is a lot of dead bad bacteria, because pasteurization doesn't filter out the bacteria, it just kills them. So now we have lots of dead bacteria in the milk instead of having a healthy milk that was raised correctly. So, you know, there's that silly warning label that I'm sure you've seen on the milk.
Yes, I have.
It was put there politically. One of the physicians on the Milk Commission actually looked at that label when it was coming into being and said, this is a great label. It would be more accurate if they put it on the pasteurized milk. But they overruled him and put it on the raw milk because they were politically trying to get people to stay away from these little dairies. They wanted them at the big dairies. But I drink 6 quarts of whole raw milk a week. And if I go out of town at a conference, I stop drinking milk because if I drink pasteurized milk, it stuffs me right up and I start talking like this as though I had a horrible cold.
Well, you know, I have been in your classes more than once, and I love when you have people raise their hands if they are lactose intolerant. And I've actually used that in presentations myself, and it is phenomenal, the results that you achieve just by asking that question. Can you share just a bit of that? I remember there were probably 17 to 20 people that raised their hands at one point.
I always like to go over that. I like to explain that Mother Nature or, you know, Father Time or God, I let people believe in whatever they want to believe in, you know, puts a large amount of the lactase enzyme into the milk to help our bodies digest the lactose, milk sugar. And so therefore, if you're lactose intolerant, all that really means is that you're not producing enough of the enzyme to properly break down the milk sugar and digest it. Well, we're not supposed to have to produce it. You know, Mother Nature, God, whoever put it in the milk, and good old mankind or humankind, you know, we think we know more than these people. And so we pasteurize the milk, destroy all of the enzyme, and now people can't deal with it. And so I usually explain this to people and ask for those people that know, not that they're allergic to milk, that you could be allergic to a tomato or a pepper or anything, but that they're lactose intolerant, to please try the raw milk and see what happens. And the vast majority of them come back, and, you know, I call on them again, and they say, yeah, I didn't have any problem with the raw milk. Well, sure, because nature put the lactase enzyme in there, and we didn't kill it by pasteurizing it, or I prefer to call it cooked milk, because that's what you're doing.
No kidding. Incredible. It's been my experience that food can address a host of illnesses in childhood, and in speaking to a number of parents who are, I'm actually seeing, they're sharing that their children are experiencing puberty, David, as early as 5 years old. And I remember as a PEDS educator, I was taught to teach parents the same thing, that by the year 2010, five-year-olds would be having periods, and I'm seeing the effects of it already, and we're not even there yet. I know that healthy replacement research, hormone replacement research out of UCSD, and the old studies of George Washington Carver in the innovations he made in makeup, both require the use of soy. I'm wondering, David, could this soy formula concept be a factor in the hormonal disruption that so many young children are experiencing today?
Yes, there's absolutely no doubt about that. Medicine has a, I don't know what you want to call it. I guess we could call it a belief that everything must be labeled.
Hmm.
So as soon as something that they consider not to be healthy appears, they have to put a label on it. So, for example, what you just said, which is people reaching puberty much, much too early, they had to put a label on it, and it's listed in the medical books, it's called precocious puberty, and it's a sexual development far earlier than what is considered to be normal or healthy. And, yes, you are correct. This is caused by what we call exogenous hormones, hormones that are not being produced by the body, coming into the body and being hormone mimics and doing things to the body that were never supposed to be done because those hormones weren't supposed to be there. And this very often does come from soy, which has all sorts of phytoestrogens, in other words, plant-based hormones in it. There are also the effects that we get from numerous types of poisons, such as pesticides, herbicides, fungicides. They all have what are called xenoestrogenic effects. In addition to that, we now have all the research done on plastics. So we know that various different types of hormone effects come out of toxins that are released into food by a plastic container. And the higher the temperature that the food reaches while it's touching the plastic, the more of these toxic chemicals come out. So if you want to make your food really poisonous, then take a plastic container and heat it up in a microwave. Now we have plastic food, plastics in contact with the food in a microwave, heating it up, and the largest amount of poisons, many of which are estrogenic or hormone mimics, come into the food. Of course, as you know from my classes, if it were up to me, they would simply outlaw microwaves from the published research showing that it actually changes the food into something that is more damaging for the person. But even if somebody's going to use a microwave, and I tell people not to, please warm your food only in glass containers. Don't let it be touching plastic. If you've got something that has to be in plastic, then don't let it get hot. So if your milk is in plastic but it's in the refrigerator, that's not so much of a problem. If your water bottles are in plastic that you carry around with them, and you leave your water bottle in the car all day, which might hit 140 degrees, that is not a good idea. So if you're going to leave your water bottle where it can get that hot, you should transfer the water into either a glass container or a clean canteen, makes a little thin-walled stainless steel container, because all of the plastics have these same problems, and the only difference is which poisons come out into the plastics. They used to think 1 and 2 were the worst, then 1, 2, or 3 are the worst. We used to tell people get something with a number 7 on the bottom. Then they found that a different toxin called phthalates comes out of the number 7. They hadn't been looking for that one. So the less we can have our food contacting plastic, the better off we are. And when it does, we don't want that food to be very warm or hot. And a couple of my favorite books that go over just a little bit of this is Our Toxic World, A Wake-Up Call, by Doris Rapp, M.D.,
yes.
and The Crazy Makers by Carol Simon-Tachi. I believe Price Pottinger carries them both, but there's a lot of information out there, and there are things that we can do to reverse that.
That's good news.
Very, very good news. It's gone over at some of our conferences. I've seen some writing on it, and what it entails is, number one, having the people stop any type of soy product, so we're not putting all these estrogen mimics into the child. Number two, no longer cooking anything in plastic or putting it into plastic, and that's not just microwaving. That's also these little fruit juice containers, people think of like as paper or cardboard.
Yeah.
Well, the inside is sprayed with a plastic coating to make it waterproof, so we've got chemicals coming into that. So we have to get rid of all of those, and then we use special types of supplements, which the only reason I'm not going to talk about them is because they need to be customized for each child to help the bodies to get rid of the excess hormones, and we can sometimes stop the precocious puberty from progressing, and it's always worth trying to do that, but of course, you know me, I like to prevent things, I don't like to reverse them, so I tell people just, you know, throw out your microwave, use it to anchor your boat, stop getting things with plastics, and anything you can, stop feeding soy, and get on some of the good soy websites to take a look at them. I keep on the back of my card, one of the good soy websites is soyonlineservice.co.uk, but there are a lot of them out there. And let's prevent this stuff rather than seeing how much of it we can reverse.
Thank you so much. You know, I had a couple of more comments on that line, but it is still so overwhelming as a parent to even be hearing this much. And what I want to leave on this topic is the sense that there is hope and there is something that we can do as fearless parents to get our children's health back. And
absolutely.
That's what is powerful. That's what's most powerful.
And you know, it's always interesting that somebody will say how difficult something is.
Yes.
In relation to a product that didn't exist.
Mm.
So, for example, somebody will say, well, how could anybody possibly live today without a microwave? Exactly, that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to laugh because for the vast majority of my life, there were no microwaves. Or how could somebody live without a cell phone? For the vast majority of our lives, there were no cell phones.
So true.
So, you know, it's got to be possible.
Well, I think we're doing it fairly well over at our house, too, so... Yeah, there's two of us in the world.
When we had our kitchen remodeled and doubled in size to make it into a professional kitchen, the contractor said, I looked at your plans. Where's the microwave going?
Wow.
And I said, I won't have a microwave in my kitchen. He said, well, how about resale value? I said, I'm doing this for me. Next people can deal with that.
Hello. Well, you know what? I got to just, one quickie. I'm taking an aside, but you made me think. When we first bought our house, and it was a long time ago, the realtor came in and said, where will you be putting the television? I said, we don't own one. And he said, well, what do you plan to do with your time? Well,
is that the only thing we can do with our time? That's very sad.
And you know, I laugh because through the years we have had so many people in our house who realize when they leave that we didn't have television because the time was rich, because we actually engaged each other in conversation. So welcome to the club.
Yep, excellent.
Yeah.
I love it.
Yeah, and then next, if you could you comment, I know this is a bit selfish, but I'm wanting to know, what would you say about the breakfast that we had? And it was red rice with coconut milk and spices over tomatoes and eggs scrambled in raw cow butter, carrot and wheatgrass juice along with a cluster of grapes. This varies a lot. This was just one sample. What we ran out of was raw goat's milk and vitamins. And here's, I guess, where I really want to get your feedback especially. I give her a quarter of my super nutrition postnatal. My thinking on that, and, of course, a capsule of cod liver oil. And my only thinking on that is if it was safe for her during pregnancy, and I'm using it during post-pregnancy for nursing because she's 2.5 and I'm still nursing. I can't wait to get my breast back, but in the meantime, that's what we're doing. I'm thinking it's probably safe. What would you say about this breakfast?
It sounds like a very good breakfast. I'd like to make sure that if you're giving eggs, that there's an adequate amount of the eggs, because that's the good animal protein. And, of course, obviously making sure that it's the whole egg. There's a lot of people listening to this that go, oh, yeah, we use eggs. We just take out the yolk. Well, sorry, that's not an egg anymore.
Yes.
You know, you're telling nature and God that they're stupid, and I apologize, but they're not stupid.
Hello.
They put it all together. We leave it all together. So as long as there's enough egg in there, that sounds like a pretty good meal. I would probably remove the grapes. Only because I find that there's usually more sugar in the grapes than I would generally give a kid.
Okay.
And I'm afraid that it's going to begin a sweet addiction where they're going to scream if they don't get their grapes, and then later it'll be candy. So that's the only thing. And for vitamins, I've never liked breaking a vitamin up. You probably grind it up so it's not a problem, but if you just broke it, now you've got sharp edges on there. I'd rather have a whole children's vitamin instead that I wouldn't have to worry about. But otherwise, it sounds great. You know, every meal has to have a good amount of animal-based protein, preferably from animals that are raised on that animal's traditional food, and, you know, organic if possible.
Yeah.
And really the worst thing that we can do to destroy a child's likelihood of staying healthy is to put them on either a strict vegetarian diet, which is a very unhealthy diet, or on a low-fat diet. They badly need fats for growth. Heck, you know, their brain development and IQ is dependent on healthy fats such as the cod liver oil you're giving, which is great. And meats and healthy fats are simply super important. Since, you know, corn and soy and canola and cottonseed oils are on all the unhealthy fats, even though people think they're the good ones.
We're told they are, David.
We're told they're the good ones, and yet the good fats are butter, extra virgin olive oil, coconut oil, and palm kernel oil, and we're told those are the bad ones. You know, most parents have a lot to learn, which is why I did my three-hour Eating for Optimal Health video set.
And the fact that you're willing to come on here on this audio series and share this information is phenomenal, and I want at the end, if we can, to just repeat your website, the Price Pottinger website, to give folks some information for where to go next.
Sure.
You actually were the one that taught me to try what it's like on what we did previously to having a protein source, an animal fat, in the diet at breakfast time, and I need to tell you that our energy level is sustained beautifully throughout the morning. It just is a phenomenal change for us as a family. So
excellent.
Thank you for doing that. Knowing that the U.S. is not even 30th on the list of healthiest nations, that's according to the World Health Organization, the last time I looked.
Yeah, pretty sad.
How useful, not this is, I'm not going to make a lot of friends here, but I need to get real because our children are at stake. But David, how useful is the information given out by registered dietitians who rely heavily on that same information that they first were putting out 30-some years ago?
Well, that's actually a very sore point in the eyes of our country's properly trained nutrition professionals, because the dietetics program in all of our colleges and universities are still teaching the same outdated, incorrect nutrition information that has been promoting heart disease, diabetes, and even cancer for decades. And, you know, it's not the dietitian's fault, and it's not the physician's fault. They're simply passing on the faulty, incorrect, invalid, harmful information that they were taught and are still being taught today in school. I actually thought it was very interesting when our U.S. government's Office of Technology Assessment a number of years ago found that the institutions in the U.S. that fed the poor, poorest, least nutritious foods were schools and hospitals, because those are the two that are required to be set up by registered dietitians. So, of course, didn't speak too well for them. But, yes, it's. I look at it as a travesty that dietitians, which should be referred to only as either dietitians or registered dietitians, are ever referred to as nutritionists, since they are not nutritionists. That perpetuates the problem. In a perfect world, a dietitian would only be allowed to be called a dietitian, and if they wanted to be called a nutritionist, they should go through one of those credentials. So far, most of the really knowledgeable dietitians that I've met, there haven't been too many of them, but, you know, they're a growing number. They realize what they don't know, are the ones that I have met at the International and American Association of Clinical Nutritionists annual conference, which I have to go to every year to keep up my board certification in clinical nutrition, and they're working towards becoming board-certified clinical nutritionists. They're listening to the legitimate science that's going on instead of just hearing the old same stuff over and over again. And those are the knowledgeable ones, and sometimes I see them at some of the other really, really good nutrition conferences like the Boulder Fest and the ACAM. But, yes, registered dietitians, for the most part, and certainly not all of them, because some of them have realized that what they learned is wrong and are going to increase their knowledge, but overall, the majority of registered dietitians are promoting things that are not in the best interest of the people they're talking to, and they don't realize it.
Well, I need to say that you're so out of the box. You are so controversial. It surprises me the number of physicians that you consult, the number of medical personnel who attend your workshops and your classes, how it is that you're able to go around the world, not just in our local little area here in Southern California, but around the world with your expertise to teach and to train clinicians and professionals at all levels. That says a lot to the fact that you've got a handle on something that they need to get as well. So
when you do things that work over and over and over again, it starts attracting more and more and more patients. Right now, I could use less. I'm booked up months and months in advance. But what's really interesting is that of all the patients that I see that come to see me for their health, who are licensed physicians, for the most part, they don't send me their patients because they don't want to hurt their practice. And actually, I think that that's a conundrum, because if a doctor, every time they think that a patient could be helped by some other professional, be it a nutritionist, an acupuncturist, an herbalist, a chiropractor, whatever, always says, you know, I think your condition might be helped by this particular man or woman. Mm-hmm. Here's their card. Go see them. Mm-hmm. After a while, that physician is not going to get less busy. They're going to get more busy, because they're going to get a name for themselves. Everybody's going to say, you got to go see this man or this woman, this doctor, because if they think that you would be benefited by somebody in some other health profession, they just send you away, and therefore everybody will always go back to them, and they don't realize that. So instead of sending me their patients, they send me their friends. So I end up seeing all these different, I've got all these doctors who all know each other because they've all sent one another to me, but I often don't get their patients. Only the really top ones that are already into nutrition and simply know that I know more than they do in that field, just as they know more than I do in the medical field, will send me patients as well.
Wow, this is just extraordinary. Let me ask you this. If parents are hearing this information and like me, for the first time, they are stirred with emotion, probably there's a little bit of anger, and usually, I hate to admit it, but we're going to want to take that out on somebody, and you would be it, my friend. But once we get past that point and get a chance to step away from what we've heard and reflect on it, there may be some questions to come up as far as where do we start? How do we begin this journey to restore our children's health for the first time?
Well, I always tell people that the first most important thing is to learn the facts, especially when the politics have been making it so that what is being told and taught to people, both in magazines and in health shows and in lectures at hospitals, are in fact not the facts. And I have a funny way of trying to push parents in the proper direction. I will often ask a parent, or if both parents are here in my office, both parents, do you think your child's health is worth a few hundred dollars in a day or two of your time?
Mm-hmm.
And, generally I'll either get a, well, yeah, Or else I'll get a weird stare like, why did you ask me such a stupid question? Of course my kids are worth, you know, a few $100 and a couple days of my time. And I go, well, no, I'm not asking this as a stupid question. This is very, very serious. Because assuming you do, in fact, feel that that their health is worth that, I suggest that you get as many of the following references as you are able and have time for and have money to spend, because you just told me that your kid's worth a few $100 in a couple days. And these are not in any particular order. I don't care which one they read first or watch first. One of them is the book, How to Raise a Healthy Child in Spite of Your Doctor, by Dr. Robert Mendelson, M.D. Fabulous book. I give that out free to all of my parents that have young kids if they're in my office during that time. I simply hand them a copy as a gift. A second is Vaccines, What the CDC and Science Reveals, by the physician, Dr. Sherry Tenpenny, who I understand, after learning about her from me, you've already interviewed her, which I think
have,
is great.
I have, David. Oh, my gosh.
Fabulous. It's a great DVD. My eating DVD, Eating for Optimal Health, the 21st Century, or for people that want more information, they can get my entire course either on DVD or on CDs. If they don't have time to watch it, they can listen as they drive, which is Attaining Optimal Health in the 21st Century. There's a book called Modern Foods by Dr. Thomas Stone. We already mentioned The Crazy Makers and Our Toxic World. And, you know, then after they've done that, and there's another video that would actually be really, really good called Sweet Fire by Mary Toscano. It goes over, in a really easy-to-understand way, all the hazards of sugars and starches. And then I tell them, if you can get through a few of those and you start reading them and watching them and go, oh, my, wow, this is very important stuff. Yeah. The more I can learn about this, the healthier my whole family is going to be, not just my children. You know, if they want, they can get onto my website. There's a big, extensive reading list there, and they can get lots and lots of other topics. You know, they can get onto the Price Pottinger's website, ppnf.org. They can even join and get the quarterly newsletter. But the first most important thing is people need to understand the truth. Yeah. Because I truly believe that although we have people out there who aren't the least bit interested in changing their diet or getting healthy, when they get sick, they're going to go to the doctor. When they're 60, they'll be on 5 or 6 drugs, according to the research. Okay. When they're 70, it'll be 8 or 10. If they make it to 75, which I doubt, it'll be, you know, 15 different drugs. Yeah. I can't touch those people. I'm not interested in those. I want the ones that really want to know so that they can properly prevent as many illnesses as possible. And those are the ones who very often, by the time they get 40 or 50 and have arthritis and heart disease and diabetes, get very upset because they go, well, I guess this holistic stuff doesn't really work because I did all the things that everybody said to do and I still have heart disease and I still have diabetes and I'm still 30 pounds overweight. Those are the people I need to get because I need them to understand that this holistic stuff works very well and they were misled and all of the things they were taught and that they thought were true were in fact not true, and that's the reason they got those diseases. Mm-hmm. So I want that small section of the population, whether it's 10% or 30%, that is willing to make the changes. I need to educate them with the true facts, as though there could be more than one kind of fact.
Oh, my goodness.
They can make the changes.
When I was growing up, I remember it being such, almost like doctrine, that the elderly in the family would deteriorate. They would get disease. It was a normal occurrence in life.
Yes.
And recently I'm seeing that young adults, high school students, and even small children are experiencing the exact same conditions that we believed and that I was taught were only for the elderly.
Oh, we have a huge absolute explosion of childhood cancer, diabetes, obesity.
Yes.
It's all diet.
Oh,
it's all preventable.
Oh, David. Talk with me for a little bit. Let's back up to that preschool director's workshop because this is my heart, to help families and hopefully to help them understand their power and their authority as parents of children in America and other parts of the world as well, but to help influence change in the direction of health for them. And what I know as a former preschool director and with my degree in this field, that we've gone by what the FDA said, and you've hit pretty hard on some of the milk issues and other things along those lines. But, David, when we have regulations that give us a standard of how to operate, and we do, and we have dietitians who are employed indirectly or directly for the FDA, and they go out and regulate the programs that are provided in preschools, and so they determine what's appropriate there. Now, those are the lowest standards, but when somebody says, here it is, we tend to want to follow that. You know, we're not researchers. We're not called to be that. I am one now. but in that capacity, we've got a lot of children, and if not hundreds, because you have to have a lot of them in a building to make the money.
Sure.
So the issue is really, can something be done? And I know, I will tell you that your presentation to the preschool directors was extraordinarily controversial. There was so much negative feedback, and yet some people were willing to receive it. Only because, again, I'm talking about FDA standards, and that is exclusively pasteurized milk. There is nothing, I've rarely ever seen anything in any building that I've visited, and I actually was an advocate and a legislative assistant for the county. I've been in a lot of seats and in a lot of programs in the county. I can tell you that Whole Food was not a consistent part of what they offered. It came out of cans. It was pasteurized. You could store and shelf 99% of what is fed to children across this county and possibly the country.
It's all very true. And I understand the problem, because the problem is exactly what you said. You know, they're going to give you a set of standards. This is what it has to be. The first thing I want people to do, and they can usually view this for free because it's often given away for nothing. There's a video called The Hidden Danger in Kids' Meals. You can probably even watch it online somewhere, but I know Jeff Smith that did the video and the book Seeds of Deception, talking about genetically modified food. He's got an entire video on there, which he was given the rights to put on after it was produced, and I forget what state the school system did this in. I've got it, just don't have it in handy.
That's okay.
But what they did was they totally revamped this particular school, and it was done with the help of a local supplier of whole grains. And of course, I don't love grains, but what they did was great. What the principal said was, one day the kids were in school and eating all the crap, so to speak, that they always wanted to eat. And the next day, the kids come into school, and there were no more soda machines. There were water dispensers. There were no more candy machines. There were no more. I mean, all of the bad things were gone. And when they went into the lunchroom, they were greeted with all sorts of fresh fruits, some fresh vegetables, you know, good quality foods, good quality meats. Any grain foods they had, such as breads, were 100% whole, made by a local bakery with no preservatives, because they didn't have to last on the shelf for a week. They were brought in fresh. And they watched the truancy rate disappear, the absenteeism rate disappear, the school grades in all the kids go up. They interviewed some of the teachers, and the teachers said, the ones that were getting ready to retire said, I don't want to retire. It's become fun to teach. And so this type of stuff gets done, and instead of every single 6 and 10 and 11 o'clock news around the country showing segments of this little short video 3 days in a row so everybody would see it, it gets squashed because nobody wants to tell the public that, because the money is going into the schools from the soda machine companies. They pay them tens of thousands of dollars to tell the school where to place their machine, where it's going to sell the most soda, and they don't want to lose that tens of thousands of dollars, so they take it in and place the soda machines. The organizations pay them to bring in McDonald's and other things, you know, as foods, and the schools don't understand. But if you look at the large picture and you include truancyism, IQs, bringing in all the problem kids, bringing in all the therapists that have to deal with these, if you can get rid of those problems by switching over the foods that are causing them to the foods that will eliminate them, they don't need the extra money being given to them by all these horrible food organizations. Yeah. It will actually save them money to get rid of the garbage and bring in the good food. So nobody understands what's going on, and that it's already been studied, it's been done, and it's been shown to work. They don't realize that. The only way that I can help that, and the Price Pottinger Foundation is looking to see if they can set up some programs in some local schools to again show that, you know, just the same thing over again.
Make the information available.
Exactly. You know, but if somebody wanted to come to me, for example, if somebody came to me and said, look, we have this type of school or daycare or whatever, and we'd like to make it healthy, what they would need to give me, because I haven't even looked at it because I really don't care, but this would make me care. They would need to give me the parameters that they are required to adhere to. So it might say X number of grams of protein a day between this and this, and X number of all of those things. I need to look at them so that I can see whether, given those parameters, I can simply switch over the foods that are supplying those and produce a really healthy meal.
David,
and I might very well be able to.
David, let me say this with all certainty. I mean, I'm willing to stake my reputation on it.
Sure.
From my experience, from my history in this field, I can guarantee you that you could blindfold yourself and at least come a notch above what they're requiring.
I'm sure.
I can guarantee it. And so what I'd like to propose, I'm trying to create a revolution, my friend. The book is called Fearless Parenting. This audio series is going to be a part of a package and a component made available to parents, not so that they can have something fun and cushy to listen to, because I don't think we're hitting that at all, but to stir emotion and to create a buzz around the country of people who are willing to restore their children's health and to not be afraid to do whatever that takes, and to know that there are people at the top of their game like you and like the others on this audio series that are willing to stand behind them. I've had that. I feel confident that I have that from Dr. Tenpenny. I feel confident that I've got that from you, David, and from the rest of the series. We've even got coming up on this series, the chair of child development from San Diego State. I mean, I am trying to bring together every person I can think of who has something that they can contribute to what it means to restore health to our children, whether that be physically, emotionally, spiritually. There's a war going on, and I'm willing to put my investment on the front line. And I thank you so much from the bottom of my heart from what you have shared. You have no idea. Let me just make sure I've got this right. Hidden Danger of Kids Meals by Jeff Smith.
It's called Hidden Dangers in Kids Meals.
In Kids Meals, okay.
And
you're thinking I might be able to Google that up.
You probably would. It was a video that was produced based on this change, that the set of changes they made in the school. Jeff Smith is simply the author of a book called Seeds of Deception.
Okay.
And a video by the same name.
Okay.
And he got the rights to splice that video of Hidden Dangers in Kids Meals into his video of genetically modified foods.
Got it. Okay. Let me ask you this. I mean, I know, you know, I cannot tell you how powerful I feel knowing your schedule and that you made time for this.
Oh, this is very important. I'll always make time for things that are this important.
Well, what I want to ask you is, and I don't know when or just how yet, but I believe that there are enough of us as parents who are ready to step up to the plate. And once we begin to do that, I want to not only make your information available through the blog and however they're setting up the website for me, but I really want to do an intensive weekend experience somewhere in the near future where we bring all these minds together, almost like a mastermind group for the weekend.
Fabulous.
And have us be able to put something powerful into some kind of format that can then be duplicated and passed out. I want to have some of... an exclusive group of folks to come as parents and professionals just together for a weekend. And I think I can put together a pretty fun weekend.
Excellent.
To make that happen. So would you join that?
I would be honored.
Okay then, sir. Thank you so much, David. I'd give you a big hug, but we're not anywhere near each other. And I've actually got a ton of writers here for our critique group tonight, and so we might have heard them here and there on the audio because they're just that excited about what we're trying to put together. So thank you so much, David.
Oh, you are very, very welcome, and this phone has done perfectly. It's much better than the other telephone.
Is it? Oh, my goodness. I'm moving up in the world, am I? Well, stay with me because there's more to come.
All right.
Take
sounds
care.
Good.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thanks so much, David, for continuing to be a friend. I truly appreciate what you've done for my family. Now it's time to turn to the section in your workbook titled Food Truth versus Dis-Ease Management from the wheel of your child's life that I call Physical Health Status. Now that you have completed this CD, you are one step closer to becoming a fearless parent. For more information on becoming a card-carrying member of Club Fearless, go to www.fearlessparenting.com.